The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Well, difficult times locally. Cabinet yesterday evening introduced further measures to stop the spread of COVID-19, including a continued closure of schools for the rest of the month and halting, to some extent, construction. To give us her reaction to the latest wave of restrictions, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald is on the line. Mary Lou MacDonald, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, it's sometimes hard to keep track of all the changes in the restrictions, but what did you make of the decisions yesterday? Writ large, of course, the continued closure of schools with exemptions for the Leaving Cert students and for some with special needs.
Well, Pat, firstly, Happy New Year to you and to your listeners. And I'm very conscious of the fact that we are now into very difficult times for people. The new restrictions certainly represent tough medicine, but it is necessary medicine. I mean, the rates of transmission speak for themselves. I now understand that we've gone over the 1,000 mark in terms of COVID hospitalizations, and our frontline services are under, immediate and growing pressure. So I think all of us knew that there had to be strong interventions. So I welcome the fact that that has happened. I am, however, extremely alarmed that it seems that the government is still not prepared, that there had been very, very little planning. We listened to confusion for a number of days and different messages coming from different sections of government on many issues, including that issue of schools that you've mentioned, Pat. And I take a very straightforward view that where we're asking citizens and sectors, businesses, families, carers, all of society to endure very strict restrictions and to take very tough medicine, in a scenario like that, the very least people deserve is a government that is prepared, is organised and is coherent. And I think in the area of the schools, and I'm speaking here as much as a parent as anything else, all of us want our children, our young people, our young adults at school, that is the best possible situation. But we know now with the level of transmission, with talk, controversy, questions around the new variant and strain, particularly from Britain, that a decision to suspend schooling for a period of time was taken. And now we have advice that Leaving Cert students should nonetheless attend school for 3 days a week. And I am very, very concerned that there is now a level of stress and concern and confusion amongst parents, students and, let it be said, teachers, because the government has not set out in the plainest of terms the advice that it got from NPHET and from the chief medical officer, which told them that it was safe for these students not just to travel to school, but to congregate in classrooms for extended periods of time.
Mary Lou, this is from memory now. Stephen Donnelly was on the breakfast programme this morning and he read out some of the advice that he got from the NPHET. And basically it was that schools are not dangerous places, but movement is. So therefore, you close down schools and you eliminate a huge amount of movement around the country. And that, in theory, will bring down the rate. But therefore, you can selectively keep some movement going, much diminished because it's only the Leaving Cert cohort, and that won't present a problem. Now, that's just from memory. I'm only talking off the top of my head. But that was the substance of what he said.
No, I heard what the minister had to say, but the minister should have been upfront and should have indicated to people that the government neither sought nor received specific advice as regards Leaving Cert students. And they need to seek and secure specific advice from the public health experts as regards the safety, not just of these students travelling to school in terms of the mobility question that you raise. And I accept that that is the case. It was very clear that a million people on the move would be disastrous when we have such high levels of transmission. But it's not just mobility. It's also congregation. And the question that I hear from teachers, from parents, from students, is whether or not the safety of students and teachers congregated in classrooms for extended periods of time has actually been authorised, cleared, advised upon by the public health authorities. Yeah, am I understanding that the answer to that question is no?
Well, you may have heard Norma Foley being pressed by Kieran Cuddihy on the hard shoulder yesterday on that very question, and we got no clear answer from the minister. The question, though, of the Leaving Cert 3 days a week and the complexity then of those teachers who have to teach in class those students for 3 days of the week, however each individual school might organise it, they then have to return home and somehow teach the other classes who are not Leaving Cert classes their geography, their history, their mathematics, or whatever it is via Zoom. You know, when you get statements from government ministries, you expect some detail. We don't know whether every sixth year we'll be wearing a mask, for example, in school. We don't know. I mean,
well, look, that brings me back to my point. So my first alarm is, and specifically on the issue of Leaving Cert students, is that absence, it seems, of very clear, specific medical advice. And then secondly, you're right, Pat, and I had said this in my opening remarks, the lack of preparation. I mean, listening to some of the stakeholders yesterday when they were giving their first response, they indicated that their meetings with the minister were very brief. It was certainly not consultative. They were just given the broad outline of what was going to happen. And, you know, that's very troubling. I accept that we're in very, very difficult, a very difficult situation. And any decisions that will be taken are tough decisions. I know that. I think we all know that. But what I cannot accept is the level of disorder and lack of planning from government, up to and including a lack of sustained, comprehensive contact with the stakeholders, sector by sector, whether it's education or otherwise, who are directly impacted by these very difficult measures. That, to me,
Mary Lou,
is
what
not
do you think
acceptable
should happen?
A year on.
Do you think, I mean, we'll be talking with Professor Luke O'Neill later on, because they've done a study in the UK about how vaccinating certain cohorts of the population will impact on the death rate and so on. So we'll be teasing that out with him. But do you think at this stage it might have been better for them just to say, look, Leaving Cert not happening at the beginning of June, it will happen at the beginning of July. So if you lose a month in school, it's not the end of the world. And also we will change the format a bit to give you more choices so that you're not, you know, you won't be screwed by your lack of preparation totally. You will be able to prepare for the Leaving Cert. Well, I mean, is that the kind of decisive talk we need now?
Well, I think the first decisive action has to be around guaranteeing the safety of students and of teachers, and then by extension of their families. I think also the very clear action in respect of the childcare needs of teachers, and by the way, other frontline workers, if it is a thing that they are to return back to their places of work. That's another area where we've had fudge and indecision almost
we've
a year
bubbles.
On from the beginning
people are
of this.
To form their own bubbles.
Yeah, but I mean, is that
how
really
does that work?
Pat? Is that really, Pat? The formation of a family bubble, I think, is an established practice now over the course of the last number of months. I think people have their heads around that concept. But is that really an acceptable response from the state and from government for workers, for parents, for people on the front line at this stage, months and months into this pandemic? I don't think it is. I don't think it's good enough for the government to say, well, look, make your own arrangements, which is essentially the message that's coming from government. So the issue of safety and preparedness in education and childcare and beyond that, the government has fallen very short of. But on the issue of the Leaving Cert exam itself, again, I very much hope that we can have a traditional Leaving Cert exam in the summer. But I know for that to happen, there has to be extensive contingency planning by government. And just so as your listeners know, Pat, my colleague, Donacha O'Leary, our education spokesperson, has been asking the minister for months now, since the summer, to produce that contingency plan for the Leaving Cert, but also for the Junior Cert. And I am very concerned at this stage that we've had no word of that. We've seen no progress on that. And that suggests to me that we have a strategy that is a bit a wing and a prayer from government. And you cannot afford to adopt that kind of position when things are so serious and when things are so tough for people, bearing in mind that there are people right across now the land who haven't seen a day's work in almost a year, whose financial situation has been jeopardized, who live now literally week to week and who are tearing their hair out, many of them at this stage. And at a minimum, society needs the sense of assurance that you have a government who can talk to people, who can actually engage with sectors, engage with people's concerns, and who can plan. And the evidence so far, and I'm sorry to say this, is that the government can't do that. They can make announcements around new new measures, you know, new public health interventions and new restrictions, and they are necessary, and I accept that, and I welcome that we now have word on those. But the lack of planning for the consequences of those is, to my mind, astonishing at this stage.
Well, you know, there is a thing called contingency planning, and that is if this scenario unfolds, we do A. If the other scenario unfolds, we do B. If a third scenario unfolds, we do C. There does seem to be a lack of that. Everything seems to be a bit of a surprise. This text, this is the government doing a solo run again. The teachers can bring infection into school. The students can bring infection into school. At this period of time, with the virus rampant, we need to reduce our contacts. And that includes every member of society. Keep the schools closed until the numbers come down. Is that really what you were saying? You know,
in the absence of any
explanation, close them down.
Well, in the absence of absolute assurances from the experts, the public health experts, that safety can be assured, and from government that will be resourced, in the absence of that, it's simply not safe. It's premature to say that tens of thousands of Leaving Cert students can go back safely into the classroom. And I think that's the issue. You know, when people look at the scenario that we're living through now, they know full well that we are in grave danger. I mean, those that say that this virus is a hoax need to give themselves a shake. It's anything but. I wish to God it was a hoax. It is not. And we have a huge job as a society to keep each other and to keep ourselves safe. But for that to work, personal responsibility is one part of the equation. We all have to be mindful and thoughtful in our actions and our decisions. But the other side of the equation is the actions of government, you know, where they intervene and where they afford the kind of supports that people need, give clear advice and assure above and beyond all else that people are in fact safe. And I think that is the issue that has arisen now. I mean, on the issue of travel onto the island, let me say I very much welcome the fact that they have, however belatedly, introduced the necessity for checks and for a test, a negative test, for traffic from Britain and from South Africa. But I scratch my head and I wonder, why limit it to Britain and to South Africa? We've been saying again for months, Pat, that we need a proper system of not just an initial negative test, but then a second test when the person has landed on our shores. We need to have a proper system of checks and of quarantine for people when they arrive. And I have to tell you, it's fallen on deaf ears.
Yeah. And I'm frustrated there is that issue, Mary Lou, of the border.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're talking about people bringing infection in, there was a time when Northern Ireland was worse than us. We are now worse than Northern Ireland, it appears, in numerical terms. But the infections in Louth, in Monaghan and so on, indicate that the border area is a particular problem. What do you do about border areas where, you know, you're not going to be asking for a PCR test to drive from Donegal into Derry?
No, you're not. But what we need and what we have argued for consistently from the beginning of all of this is a coherent all-Ireland approach to all of these matters. And I think we would have met with more success had we had that very tight operation between Dublin and Belfast from the get-go. But that was not possible. And there's reasons for that. And I have to say, in fairness, all of that does not land at the feet of the government in Dublin. We've had a considerable issue with some of our unionist colleagues in finding consensus as to the safe and the correct way forward. But now at this time where, and it's not a case, Pat, of, you know, pointing fingers from one jurisdiction to the other and say you're worse or we're better. Sure, that's not going to help anybody. But the reality is now right across the island, we are hitting record peaks. Our hospital systems, our health systems are under incredible stress and strain. Our people at the front line are in the line of danger. And I think at this point, this is now the moment for all of us to step forward and to accept on issues like travel onto the island. We need to have an all-Ireland approach so that anybody entering through any port or airport onto the island of Ireland, it is for essential travel, and that person has a test and is tracked appropriately to ensure that we minimise any importation any strain or variant of it.
We saw the unionists' dismay at the notion of a border down the Irish Sea for trade. Watch them object to a border down the Irish Sea for public health reasons. Anyway, I wanted to address something that we had a go at Piers Doherty yesterday. He was criticising the notion that people would have to pay tax on their payments under PUP or under the wage scheme, which arose before August of last year. And the understanding was that this was always a taxable, these were always taxable payments. And he, you know, objected to me characterising him as he should know better. What do you say?
He did, yeah. Well, he does know better, and he presented the facts as they were when the PUP was introduced between March and August. It was not on a statutory footing. It was not a taxable payment. It was an exceptional needs payment. And bear in mind, this was going to people who had lost their jobs, not because their jobs weren't viable, but because this public health emergency hit us like a train, and because the state had to correctly intervene to support people's incomes. In August, then, the payment is put on a statutory footing, and like other welfare payments, they can be subject to tax. So there's no issue there. The issue that Pierce raised, and he is correct in raising it, is that to retrospectively or with hindsight to apply tax between March and August to a payment that was not taxable in law is simply wrong. And Pierce correctly
What the department said, and indeed the minister said at the time, you might remember the outrage, people getting €350 a week when they had only been earning, say, €100 a week for working in a supermarket for half a day, that kind of thing. And they were told at the time, before August, that these would be taxable.
Well, look, that's...
You know, and the department says that it was always understood, because to do otherwise would be to discriminate against those who are on job seekers' benefit or other such payments, because they are taxable. So you some people getting the other payment and it's not taxable, and then the people who are on long-term unemployment or whatever, which is potentially taxable,
unfairly. I think it's very disingenuous for anyone to try and take from the facts of the scenario that I've set out by trying to pitch people on job seekers against people on the pandemic unemployment payment. All of those people and their families are under significant financial pressure.
The point being you have to treat everyone the same in fairness. You can't be saying to some people who are getting an unemployment payment of some description, you know, allowing for partners, children and so on, that you've got to pay tax on that, but that someone else who's on a PUP doesn't have to pay tax on it.
Well, doesn't make sense. There are issues of fairness riddled right across our society, and there are contradictions within our welfare code, of that there is no doubt. But just bear in mind, the pandemic unemployment payment specifically was an emergency provision in a context where masses of people lost their jobs overnight because the state intervened and shut the economy down correctly, because we were facing into this public health emergency. And at the time, you're right, the department had plenty to say about this being taxable. But the fact is, in law, it was not taxable. That's right. The point that has been
all
made.
Right.
And
just finally,
bear in mind,
Pat,
can I just say this? The issue of, you know, people who are doing two shifts or a shift in the local garage and all of a sudden they're on €350. That was a design flaw in the original system. But that's on the government. That's not on everybody else. Right. Lots of other people, when they lost their job and went on this payment, the fact is that their income got walloped and they were put under incredible strain and incredible
but
hardship.
But the scheme, now, in fairness to revenue, whether they're right or wrong in law, the scheme is not very onerous in the sense that it's payable over 4 years. It doesn't start till 2022. A lot of water will be under the bridge before then. Hopefully a massive recovery.
Can I just say, the reality is there's no debate or question as to the fact that there's tax due from August onwards. But this business of treating the PUP and retrospectively levying taxation is in marked contrast to other loopholes when they're closed down for the very wealthy and for the big corporates. There's no question.
I would just make the point for the department. They say it was the law they used was one simply for convenience to get it through quickly. But we'll debate that another day. Mary Lou McDonald, President of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for joining us.